Hi, Royals fans. This is J.J. Piccolo. The University of Kansas Health System is the official health care provider of the Kansas City Royals. Get the major league care you deserve at kansashealthsystem.com/royals.
This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Yes, who's back? Back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
The next time that Blake misses a chance to have fun with the intro music will be the first time. Welcome into Sports Saturday here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Joshua Briscoe. I am back. Blake Schneiders is picking the music, running the board, hitting the buttons on the other side of the glass. And I know there's college football on today. I get it. I do. I understand. And we'll get to a little bit here or there, but we're going to spend a good chunk of today's show talking about Chiefs and Bills, looking ahead to tomorrow night's primetime matchup. If you didn't notice that I was gone, I was. Because I was in the hospital. And things are better now. I got some cool, fun, just like ways to check my blood sugar so it doesn't get over 900 again, which is really important that it doesn't happen. That does not happen. It shouldn't have happened the first time, but I didn't know that my pancreas had decided to largely peace out of the conversation. And so, honestly, all things considered, I feel pretty good right now. I feel very lucky that nothing worse happened than it did. And I'm glad to be back on the radio once more. I was back for the postgame show last Sunday, but haven't had a whole lot of time to chat because we've had so many live sports here on Sports Radio 810 with the MLB playoffs happening, obviously tons of NFL football, and then even a little high school football on Friday. So good to be here on a Sports Saturday again with Blake on the other side of the glass. We've got a good guest list for you today as well. Here in an hour, we'll talk to Joe Wiz, who will give you all the gambling advice you need going into another NFL Sunday. It'll be good to talk to him for the first time in a couple of weeks because of the aforementioned unpleasantness. So good to have Joe Wiz back in the fold. After that, we'll talk to my dear friend Jordan Foote of ArrowheadReport.com, the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast. We'll talk to him at just right after Joe Wiz, probably about 12:20 or so. And then Nick Fiero of Bill Central, also on the SI Fan Nation Network. He'll join us at 1 o'clock to give us the Buffalo perspective on everything that's happening going into this weekend's biggest, most, I think, clearly most anticipated game. We've gotten some absolute primetime bangers from the NFL so far this year. Even the Thursday night action has been pretty good. Except I heard, I think it was Panthers-Texans a couple weeks ago. This is how you could know how sick I was, by the way. We're not going to spend a whole... I've got some stories to tell. Probably going to save that for almost entirely sports whenever we're back with an AES. I'll get into some of the real nitty-gritty of some of the things that are, in retrospect, kind of funny. And, you know, if you can't joke about it, that's how you know it's bad. And, it ultimately could have been a lot worse. So I'll save those stories for AES. But you can know how sick and out of it I was because I will watch Thursday Night Football under the worst of circumstances, the best of circumstances, it doesn't matter. Sometimes I'll multitask if it's, you know, a game that is really tough, like perhaps Panthers-Texans would have been. It was Panthers-Texans, right? That sounds right. But I was in the hospital, let's see, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I got out Saturday night. This was not last week, but the week prior. Week before Chiefs Chargers, I did post game Chiefs Ravens, went home and barfed, and then was back for Chiefs Eagles. So anyway, you know that it was tough for me on that Thursday night because not only did I not watch a single second, there was a TV, a very small one, but there was a TV in my hospital room, and not only did I not turn it on or watch Thursday Night Football or watch anything, I hand to God, did not know it was Thursday. I didn't decide, like, I can't watch Panthers-Texans right now because it'll only make me hurt worse. I will only get sicker because of that. No, I just, there's like a 30-ish hour period that I have virtually no memory from whatsoever. Again, we can get into some of that in the AES next week or whenever we have AESs again. But it just totally wonked out my entire schedule until really Saturday morning. I started kind of figuring out what things were going on. Because I finally turned on the TV and I watched like almost all of I think it was Baylor, Iowa State. And I just basically just had the TV on, feeling a lot better on that Saturday. Just to know that there was college football on in the morning, so it had to be Saturday. it just had to be. And so it was sort of an anchor in my day. And since then, I have largely known what day it is. So, again, can't really complain too much. But, Blake, how have you been? It's good. I will say this, and this is rarely true. It's good to see you. Because usually I see you very early in the morning on a weekend, and there is some drowsiness, you know, for both of us.
I was going to say for you or for me.
for both of us. It can be a grind, especially depending on, you know, what was going on Friday. But it is genuinely good to see you today. Because I'm here. It's good to be here.
I'm glad to hear those words come out of your mouth, and I'm going to save this and send it to myself because those will never be heard again, especially not on the air.
Definitely not.
In fact, I have been worried sick. I have been just stressed out. I just didn't know what was. We were all waiting whether, you know, because I believe that this was the exact text that I received from you the other day. You said, I believe you were the last person I talked to before I lost all consciousness of space and time.
I was just going to mention that again, actually, as you were nearly the last person I ever texted. You might have gotten my last text.
And you know what? I would have cherished that as well.
I appreciate that you would have cherished that. I would rather continue to text you and others even. Going forward, because I can't remember, something vaguely work related. I think
it was extremely work related.
Okay,
it was about how we weren't going to work together.
Oh yeah, yeah, you're right.
It was about how it was like was canceled for Tuesday because you weren't feeling very good.
Yes. Yeah.
So we were texting mid you on the brink.
Yes, and I just thought I had some amount of food poisoning or something weird going on. I'll say this also, cause some of these details are just bonkers, and I can't help it. We're going to have a ton of Chiefs Bills today, so we'll get to a ton of that. But, like, one thing that was a reason that we didn't even think I had the flu or whatever is Renee kept, just sort of touching my forehead, which, by the way, we really should just buy a thermometer because this would have solved some issues sooner. We really should just get one of those. But she kept, like, feeling my forehead, and she was like, you do not feel like you have a fever at all. And I didn't feel like I was burning up or anything. In fact, like, I'd been wearing like a hoodie indoors for like the week or two, and whenever I got to the hospital, my body temperature was like 94 point something, which if you don't know a lot about your body temperatures, that is too low. It needs to be higher than that. So we just had no idea. It was completely bonkers. And so again, it could have, with the diabetic ketoacidosis, a phrase that I did not know before this, and now I know it very well, or DKA, and the 900 plus blood sugar and all of that. It could have been a lot worse, and ultimately I got turned around and kicked back out of the hospital. I think it was 5 days, 4 nights, something like that. And now I have a fun thing where I have a little like sensor that I just implant into my belly every 10 days. And it will constantly check my blood sugar every 5 minutes. And then I can look at my watch and see that right now my blood sugar is 167. I had a breakfast burrito at Sonic, and I probably should have taken a couple more units of insulin. That's a little bit high. But you know what? It's not 928. So we're better than we were. We're better than we were.
Drastically different.
A few weeks ago. It has dropped down a lot.
So I because I was so worried sick.
Worried sick.
We were hanging on
such
to Twitter.
Friend.
because Twitter was how we were getting updates from, I believe, your
mom, my dad, was tweeting out updates, and yeah, and then Renee eventually tweeted one.
And
that was later.
So I started reading up on just this whole scenario and everything, and not only that, but just like just a little bit more to educate myself in the medical aspect and the medical field. So
I've got needles with me. If you want to see my whole deal, I'll show you during a break or something. I'll walk you through how I've
normally
managed
that
it.
Sentence this is... would sound weird. I've got some needles with me. If during a break, you want to see these?
Yeah.
But so I read that there are actually like help dogs that can sense low blood sugar.
Is that real?
I thought it was fake at first. But the more I read into it, apparently they can tell by the smell of your sweat.
Weird.
Because obviously dogs have phenomenal sense of smell.
Right.
That your blood sugar, then, like if it's getting too low or too high, you produce, like your sweat is just a little off.
Your breath also can change if you're too high or too low.
So I didn't know
that. I have learned that.
So I didn't know if you and Renee had thought about maybe...
Please don't give Renee another excuse to try to get
to
us a second dog.
An animal that could help you out.
I think I'm pretty good now with the monitor that I've got and the Apple Watch apps and everything. Which, by the way, I got the Apple Watch. I think this was two Christmases or birthdays ago or something. And my mom was like, "Give anything that you want for like a gift because you know we're looking for trying to find a present." I'm like, "You know what? I'm kind of interested in these little Apple Watches." And so she bought like one that was a couple generations older at the time. Like, don't buy the newest possible one. I have no idea if I'm going to wear it. And so for a while I wore it and was like, you know, you can change the color of the screen elements to match whatever you're wearing if you want. You got different customizable faces and everything on it. It's kind of neat. You can change out the watch bands, which is kind of cool. And then, you know, you've got various things are maybe for the most. Hey, my blood sugar right now is 169. I think that's pretty nice. I just noticed that on my watch. And then you can do things like use it to, you know, change the volume or skip around if you're listening to a podcast or listening to music or whatever. They're like cool little things about the Apple Watch that I thought was pretty interesting. And now I'm at a point where instead of bleeding onto a high-tech strip of paper in a little tiny device to check my blood sugar 6 or 8 or 10 times a day or whatever, I can just flick my watch towards myself and I can see where it says 169. It even gives me like if it's going up or down at the moment or whatever.
So has
it,
this,
is a good time to like be diabetic if you have to be.
Is this one that is awesome?
It's
like
so
the fact
cool.
That is like something that they were like, "Hey, you know what would be great if you could save your life with your watch."
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I can see all my, I have all of my analytics, all of my stats on my phone that I can just track, and then it will sync up to my watch. It's
so
unbelievable.
So has that pretty much just replaced like you even telling time? Because you're like, I don't need to tell time with my watch.
Right.
I just need to know my blood sugar now.
Well, so I've got.
So it's not even. It's the home screen.
The home screen sort of like main face on one of the forms of it. You can put lots of little things on it. So all on one screen, I've got the date, the time, my blood sugar, and when it was last tested, and all of that. The temperature, my podcast app, and Spotify. It all fits in one little thing. This is not a commercial for an Apple Watch, but if you need to know your blood sugar all the time, I took off my watch to charge it a couple days ago, and this was like a day or two, because the first basically 2 weeks I was using the normal glucose monitor, which you prick your finger and bleed out a little bit, and the blood goes into the strip, and then it tests it. I don't know how that works. It doesn't feel great.
Yeah, I assume not.
The
You're
insulin
bleeding.
Pokes I have actually had worse luck on. And that's what a pump would eventually replace, but I'm not there yet. But yeah, it doesn't feel great. It's not that bad. The finger prick is not that bad. It's just like you just have a lot of cotton balls with like a little speck of blood on them, and you got to write it down, and you know, it is what it is. It's better than dying. So I was charging my watch a couple days ago. Again, like this was like a day after getting what is called the continuous glucose monitor, which is what, again, like you... It's like a little sticker that has a little sensor in it that pokes underneath your skin and just sits there for like 10 days. And then you swap them out every 10 days. I had to go all the way to my phone and open up the app to see my blood sugar a couple of times. And I found myself being like, God, this is so annoying. I want to just look at my wrist and just see it immediately. And this is 2 days after I no longer had to bleed onto metal high-tech paper to find out what my blood sugar was. I got spoiled so fast. Like, I became an ungrateful, spoiled brat in, like, a day. Which should be surprising to no one. Because you know me. But that's just the latest thing. Like, this is all me nerding out about something that is so incredibly self-involved, but it's just so cool. There's a website that's also an app called SugarMate, which is not a way to meet older, wealthy people that you might want to date.
Could have fooled me.
But I'm sure that app exists. It's just not called SugarMate. I don't know what it would be called, but I'm sure you can find it. But it will literally, like, I can, right now I am looking what my blood sugar has been since 8 a.m. Or I can go into this app on my phone and see what it's been for the last 12 hours. Or I can go and see what my trends are over the last 7 days and what my average sugar has been and everything. And so just so everyone knows that whenever I talk about, you know, football analytics all the time in a way that I think is super interesting, know that once there was a chance for me to actually apply it to my real life, I came by it honestly, and I am the same person now. There's no diabetic film to study. There's just the analytics and science. So thank you, science. And Lebo made this point whenever I did the little chat with him that played one of those. I think it actually might have been that Tuesday that you it would have been the next week. Where we talked a little bit about just sort of I gave a quick update for everybody and we podcasted it and everything. So hopefully people have heard that. But Lebo made the point of, you know, as is the case with most things in medicine, better to have it now than in the 1940s. And like my mom is also type 1 diabetic. And so like I remember her when I was pretty little, like she, like you had the needles with like the orange cap on them and the little bottles that somehow look like they have rubber over the top, but it doesn't, you know, you poke the needle through and pull it back out, but then it seals itself back up again. I remember having those like in our refrigerator because you have to keep your insulin cold if you're going to have it stored for a certain period of time. And like that is just how you had to do it. And that was not that long ago. If I knew for sure my mom was listening, I would make a joke about how that was in the 1940s because that's how old she is. And I'll find out if she's listening because I'm either going to get a mean text or nothing. And that's how I'll know. But I remember her doing that not that long ago. I mean, you know, I'm 26. And so let's say I remember that from age 6. That's how we're talking about 20 years ago. Now they've got these pens that have the insulin preloaded that you can like set the amount you need and all of that, and then again you have pumps and these continuous glucose monitors and all that stuff. Like I've learned more having this continuous monitor for now something like 3 or 4 days I think than I did in the 2 weeks leading up to now leading up to getting that, because I'm getting 6 data points on my blood sugar or whatever as opposed to literally a data point every 5 minutes. My wrist just buzzed. Hold on. Is it my mom? I think I'm safe. I think it was something else. Thank goodness.
I guess the question for me is, because I don't know. I mean, I went to school with kids that were diabetic, but I never sat them down and said, so let me ask you some hard-hitting questions.
Explain
here.
Explain some things to you. Grill me, Blake. Let's do it.
Well, I was curious. So now do you have to be very – obviously you have to be a lot more conscious about what you eat and the amount that you eat. But do you have a chart that they've given you to say, hey, like these foods contain more of – the sugar that you don't need or whatever, do these foods contain less? Or just,
yeah,
hey, just kind of keep an eye on it. Doesn't really matter what it is. Just keep an eye on your levels.
Sort of. It's a little, I mean, I think on some of it's a little bit of everything, actually. Where, like,
you cannot eat.
I should definitely, I have a giant drink here from Sonic. This is a diet cherry limeade. If you're like, diet soda tastes worse and also still has bad stuff in you for it, why do we have diet soda? Raising my hand now, because the answer is now me. If this was a regular cherry limeade, I would be in an incredibly bad place by the end of the show, because there would be a bleep ton of carbs in that, and sugar, but carbs is really the measuring stick. So at that same thing, like, I will probably eat rice and pasta incredibly infrequently, because they are absolutely loaded with carbs, but really like regular soda, fruit juice and stuff like that is just a stay away sort of thing. But also I've got lots of new packets of like prepackaged like meat and cheese, or I've never been a pork rind person.
Love
really.
Pork rinds.
I'll take some recommendations from you then. Zero carbs in a bag of pork
rinds. Yes,
the
entire bag. Yeah, you can eat an entire bag, and that's how my mom justifies being on a diet.
But so that's it, though. That's like there's something to that where I can eat all of the basically all the non-breaded, you know, meat, cheese, pork rinds that I want. So I've eaten a lot of cheese the last couple of weeks because that's like a freebie snack. Because there's no carbs in it, so it doesn't affect my blood sugar. But if I really want, I got a breakfast burrito from Sonic. And if I got a breakfast burrito and a side of tater tots, my blood sugar is going to go up because potatoes are very starchy. But I love French fries. I love potatoes. I love mashed potatoes. I love French fries. I love tater tots. And so to this point, I ordered some barbecue Thursday night, I think it was. And I didn't get a sandwich, which would have had, you know, the bread, but I still got some fries with it. And I had the fries, but I had no other carbs. Everything else was just meat. And I guess the barbecue sauce also would have it in it because there's sneaky sugars in some of those sauces and stuff. But, you know, you just have to kind of manage it. And if I really at one point was like, you know what, on Halloween, I am going to abandon this sort of low-carb lifestyle, which is just sort of the thing I'm doing right now, of like that's probably the easiest way to manage stuff is to try to go pretty low carb. But if I say, you know what, I want to have an entire Milky Way bar on Halloween, I just need a plan for that 30 minutes in advance and not eat it and then go, oh, you know what, I should have taken some insulin, because that would I wouldn't like die or anything, but I would have a pretty wacky up and down on my chart. So it's just managing everything. And so far, with my mom being type 1 and being in town whenever I was almost dying, and then having girlfriend Renee sort of completely revamp our entire, like, pantry and kitchen situation, been in pretty good hands, been in pretty good shape so far. So I will also go ahead and put out the call. I saw Blake took a phone call. If anybody is like, oh, man, this is nuts. You know what I think what Josh might want to hear? My favorite low carb or no carb snack, or my favorite brand of pork rinds, or my favorite sugar free drink. Maybe I should tweet that at him at JB Briscoe. Please feel free to, because that's basically the biggest thing when people have reached out and been like, hey, I'm type 1 diabetic, can I help? Which is really awesome, and I've appreciated that very much. The main thing that I'm asking people is just for good snack and food suggestions that won't make my body freak out. Because as much as I have a newfound love of Baby Bell cheese and string cheese and whatnot, I am getting a little bit tired of eating as much cheese as I'm currently eating. Small drawback. Let's take a break here, Blake. And whenever we come back, we'll actually talk about football some. I didn't think we were going to spend 20 minutes on all this, but it's been very interesting. And I don't know, either you heard this and thought it was also interesting, or you heard this and thought, well, you know, maybe after this next break, we'll actually talk Chiefs Bills. For whatever reason, thanks for sticking around. We'll talk about Chiefs and Bills whenever we come back here on Sports Saturday.
This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
One other thing, Blake, that I'll tell you before we get to Chiefs Bills is you mentioned that you brought in donuts earlier. You brought the box into the room I was working in earlier.
Not for you. I hope people don't think I brought you this.
No.
The sugariest thing I can find.
No. And also bread. It's just the sweetest bread possible. When you brought the box down, I went, oh, man, I hope Blake isn't about to offer me a donut, because I love donuts, and turning down a donut for the first time in my life probably would have really been a hurtful experience. For both of us, I'm sure. Because
yeah.
Then I have to reject you, and every time I say no to you, you just start weeping, like, hard.
Well, it's hard. I don't take rejection well.
No, I know. I know. Because it's just been, like...
So do most of the women in my life, so...
Yeah, they've found out...
That I don't take it well.
The easy way, which is just by simply telling you no for any reason. And you would think, like,
that's
oh,
a problem
man.
Out at the bars in public.
I know. Well, that's the thing is, like, people think that you're having a psychotic break. And you are. I guess you might be, I suppose. You
really, I'm just sensitive. But no,
I got to work on that.
I didn't bring you the... I brought those in the, for the morning for the Midwest Outdoors Boys because they usually bring me some good stuff. So
they're
I was like,
best.
I'm going to repay the favor. And then I left them in there. And then good old Danny Klinkscale, I think, snatched one of my donuts.
Wow.
So you're welcome, Danny.
Leaving them in here, rookie mistake, though. Because you just find floating food around a radio station. And... Unless it has someone's name written on it, it's
not even that.
Most
matters.
People think it's fair game, but not even that matters.
Here at 810, we've had to email people to say, "Hey, don't steal my stuff."
We had an email thread that happened also probably I don't know like 3 years ago or so. I kind of thought that maybe COVID would end that for people, but no. I've got my suspicions, you know. You can build the profile of the most likely food stealers. But it's crazy because like that didn't even happen to me in college. Like I had place like my in the newspaper office at college, I would leave either just like snack foods that you could leave in a drawer for a while or even like or like instant ramen or something. I don't think I ever had anybody steal my food. Why does that happen here?
It's so confusing. I will say that I...
Are you a food stealer?
I used to be. I learned my lesson in college, so now that I'm in the adult world, I don't.
I trust
you. But you have a couple beverages, adult beverages, and Blake gets a little hungry.
Sure.
And he does not care. He's kind of like Cookie Monster, but anything goes. But I was abruptly woken up at like 8 o'clock one day with a furious roommate who played D-end on our Austin Peay with me.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just say it didn't go well for Blake.
Yeah.
I was quickly and swiftly put in my place, and I never stole any food after that.
I mean... Where is that guy now? Do you know?
He runs triathlons. Triathlon. I don't know why that sounded weird coming out.
You nailed it. You got
triathlons up in New Jersey. He's a good friend of mine, Tish and I.
Can we? What was the last thing you said?
His last name is Schneider.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, Tyler Schneider.
Do you want to see if he wants to come here just for like a day, just sort of roam the hallways, just sort of stick his head in the break room every once in a while, see if anybody's rooting around in the fridge a little too long?
He just pokes his head in.
Hey. Get out of there. That got your name on it? Didn't think so. Put her down. I'm Liam Neeson, apparently. I don't know why. I have a very specific set of skills. I will protect the food in the fridge. I do have to carry around just, like, even more snacks than I used to now. Like, I brought in a bag of snacks that I'll just leave in the fridge for tomorrow, probably now also. I know it's a dangerous game, but it's just a Saturday into a Sunday. It feels relatively safe. But here's the extra plus side, by the way, now, is that if anybody steals any of my food, what are they going to do if I just fall on the ground and just start shaking? Not for real. I would be able to still manage. I've got, like, snacks in my bag also. But I bet I could make somebody feel really guilty.
Oh, I bet you should. Oh, that's a dirty trick, sir. That is a dirty trick. But also, I would love to see it.
If somebody takes my little discs of salami, my little, basically, it's like a charcuterie board, like in a prepackaged charcuterie board with meat and cheese that I can eat without affecting my blood sugar, because it's got no carbs. If somebody takes that out of the fridge, I'm going to... I'm going to fake a medical incident. And then we're in a Boy Who Cried Wolf situation, and what happens if there is a medical incident at some point? God, I'm really...
And then Blake's like, he's faking!
Right, you're going to be like, oh, Josh is doing that bit he said he was going to do. I'm foaming at the mouth. That doesn't... How did he pull that off? Look at my... You look at my watch, and my blood sugar is 700. it's good to be back. Are we doing two segments or three segments this hour, Blake? I should ask you that.
We're doing two.
All right, great.
We're just gonna segue back into sports.
Yeah.
Because this is the show, after all. It's called Sports Saturday.
Yeah. The door just blew open in the studio, which is...
It's the 810 ghost.
Yeah, that... I mean... this point, I'm not really afraid of ghosts too much, you know? I feel like I got to hang out with him for a little bit. I think I'm probably pretty chill.
It's a harmless ghost.
Yeah,
just,
I mean,
you know, comes and goes.
Yeah, come hang out, ghost. It's fine. Just don't touch my snacks.
Ooh, okay.
Don't touch my snacks, ghost. What if there was a ghost that was
where
actually
eating? Where are the pork rinds?
I didn't bring any ghosts. I'll bring some tomorrow, probably. I actually probably will. I got some dill pickle flavored ones. Pretty good. Let's talk about the Chiefs' defense. Speaking of near-death experiences, let's talk about the Chiefs. Let's talk about the Chiefs' defense. We'll hold off on the sound for a second, but I want to get to a few things that Spag said this week, and also I want to talk about some things that I both read and then talked about with our dear friend Seth Kaiser of the Chief of the North newsletter. I was chatting with him yesterday up on Times Ours, our podcast on The Athletic. And I talked to him, got to talk to him a little bit about his latest piece that, I mean, you know, Seth has been incredibly generous with his time on AES for a very long time. And I promise you, if for $12 a year, which is the actual price, I do not misspeak, the Chief of the North newsletter, an unbelievable resource for Chiefs fans, unbelievable. But, he went through and took a closer look at what went wrong defensively just against the Eagles. He had looked at it previously as well. But whenever you go up against the Eagles and your final score is 42-30, it's a little bit misleading in two different directions, right? If the refs get the call correct, 7 points come off the board for Philly because Ben Neiman forced a fumble that was not ruled a fumble, and the Chiefs apparently didn't get a good look at the replay before the Eagles got their next snap off and they scored a touchdown. Already we're talking about bringing it down to 23. You can take another touchdown off the board if you don't worry about the garbage time at the very end of the game when the game was 99% over, if not, you know, 99.5. I think they scored super late into that final, you know, moments of the game. So you could reasonably make the argument that the real score of that game should have been 42-16 or something to that effect. Now, if I just did that for you, if I just said that, I could build an entire argument that I do not believe, just to be clear on the front end. I could set up an entire argument of, hey, the Chiefs defense actually did pretty much everything they really needed to do against Philly, and you should not be that worried about the defense. Now, again, that's not the argument I'm making because that's not the thing that I believe. But what they can do and still be somewhat successful is force a couple turnovers, which the Ben Neiman forced fumble would have been one. You got that L'Jarius Sneed strip sack that also probably could have been, this is very close to being a Chris Jones defensive touchdown. Could have made that margin even larger. But you've got two-ish turnovers and some red zone stops. If the Chiefs get a couple turnovers and some red zone stops against the Bills, I think they probably win the game. Most likely. Now, turnovers of their own and settling for field goals themselves could re-even things out. But I think there's something to that. Okay, conversely, though, specifically in the field goals, the Eagles settled for 3 field goals they should have never settled for. There was 4th and short in the red zone 3 different times. At least 4th and reasonable, especially considering where you were on the field and who you're playing, which is the Kansas City Chiefs with Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill, who can score in 15 seconds if they need to. Now, one of those ended up having a penalty that they moved back and probably would have needed to kick that field goal. Would have that was probably the right call on one of those after the penalty that they suffered, which was happening on a field goal. I can't remember if it was happening on a field goal try if they were trotting out there to go for it. But they should have had 3 separate 4th down attempts where if they sink 2 of those, you're talking about 14 points instead of 9. If they can convert all 3 of them, 21 instead of 9. Beyond that, you tell me how many times during that game you really believed that the Chiefs' defense was about to make a stop. Because with those 4th downs, the Eagles stopped themselves. They took their offense off the field. Now, there are times where you can force a three and out, or you can force a punt. If at the end of a drive it's fourth and 15, if it's fourth and 9, you know, except for in extreme circumstances, you can say your defense has forced a punt. The Eagles chose to kick field goals when going for it would have been a very obvious thing to do. I would argue, given the opponent, even more so than most of the analytics would probably even show you, which is something that I'm saying with a little bit of hesitation, because I do think that obeying the math is at least a really good place to start. But I wouldn't even hate it if teams were aggressive beyond the math because they know who they're up against. Just like, you know, if the math can't fully figure out that a field goal in a situation where you think your defense is playing exceptional football and you think you're going to get the ball back again and maybe you're down 5. Yeah, okay. And even then, most of those fourth down decision bots do take all of that into account. But maybe your defense is playing great. Maybe your offense is struggling. Maybe Geno Smith has come in for an injured Russell Wilson. You know, stuff happens. But if anything, teams should be more aggressive against the Chiefs until their defense proves that they can actually get a stop. And right now, that's not been made evident. So I can go both directions on that. I can try to be the optimist. I can try to be the pessimist. The thing that I think is actually most interesting, though, is where Seth was trying to diagnose the biggest issues. Again, this is up in his newsletter, and you should really go read it, both for the charts and the visuals and everything. The pass rush has gotten a lot of the focus, but Seth made this discovery in this piece that I think is really noteworthy as we're talking about this game from 30,000 feet and the Chiefs' defense altogether. Chris Jones playing outside has also become a point of some contention. He played about a third of the snaps inside. Craig Stout of KC Sports Network noted that. And that was more than he had apparently been playing inside up to this point. So there's a little bit of fluctuation there. Some of that's schematic. I mean, they're playing in nickel and situational and stuff like that. But as Seth discovers here, Chris Jones is the only guy that's consistently winning one-on-one. And beyond that, you have two issues. One is that Chris Jones, two issues with some sub-issues. Issue one is the rest of the unit. Now, Mike Dana cleaned up a couple of sacks against Philly, and good for him. That is an important part of his job. His job is not to be Chris Jones. His job is to help Chris Jones, right? Like, if Chris Jones forces the quarterback to move, Mike Dana should be able to clean up that mess and give the defense a little bit of a positive little perk. That's great. That's basically who Mike Dana should be. But you also have Jaron Reed, who was supposed to be the guy that could free up Chris Jones to move around more often, because he could come in and be 80%, 75% of Chris Jones, and then Chris Jones could go move to the outside. And he's just been a minimal factor to this point on a substantive deal, by the way. It's a one-year deal. So there's no, like, stretching or moving the money around. And so, you know, whenever people are talking about Stephon Gilmore or whoever, the Chiefs spent sort of their single-season budget in a lot of ways on Jaron Reed. And he has not lived up to that to this point. Frank Clark has only played one game. I'll give you an injury report update here in a second, but I'll tell you this. Frank Clark does not have an injury designation as of yesterday. So, as of right now, he should be a full clear to go tomorrow, which could be the first time he and Chris Jones and Tyrann Mathieu and all those guys are able to be at full health altogether. We'll see. Chris Jones has the wrist injury. More on that in a second. But The guys who have been on the field have not been super duper impactful outside of Jones. But the thing that I thought was actually most interesting about what Seth found is issue number two, that even when the pass rush has been winning, when Chris Jones has been impactful, when you've gotten Tershawn Wharton has apparently found this out again doing the podcast yesterday. Tershawn Wharton has been pretty darn good this year based on his pressure rates and stuff. If you haven't noticed, I would not feel bad because I haven't noticed. It's not his fault if that by the time he gets there, the ball is gone. And that can be true for Dana, and that can be true for Alex Okafor, who the only thing I have noticed him doing this year so far is shoving Jalen Hurts out of bounds and adding 15 yards to a scramble. I think it was Hurts who he shoved. And that's not, I'm not even trying to be like snippy. I just don't remember seeing him really do anything to this point, and I do remember that penalty. But whenever you have these guys getting home, it's too late. And it's not that they're even slow getting there. It's that especially against the Eagles, when Seth took a closer look at this, and man, there is a screen cap in his newsletter that will make you really sad if you're a Chiefs fan. Where Jalen Hurts, with some pressure, and not a terribly long time in the pocket, had, not an exaggeration here, three wide open targets at three different depths of the field. There was the running back out kind of in the flat by the sideline who he ultimately threw the ball to and had a walk past first down. In the middle of the field, it would have been maybe a slightly tougher throw, but his receiver was wide open, had the total advantage there and should have been in great shape, would have been an easy first down. And then even farther down the field, with a decent throw, would have turned into a wide open touchdown. He had three can't miss options to choose from. And then you can get into the miscommunication and all of the things that we'll get to here from Spags. But if you can't, and they haven't had Ward or Fenton, they didn't have either of those guys last week, and they should have them both tomorrow night. Things should get better. Mike Hughes has not been very good. DeAndre Baker's had his ups and downs. Even Legarius Sneed has ended up out of position a couple times, it seems. So it can get better. But it's concerning still. Because they just haven't done anything very well. They don't have any particular strengths defensively at this point. And I don't know what's most likely to change for the better. Maybe the coverage gets a little better. Maybe Spags changes some things up schematically to try to make things a little bit less convoluted. I'm not sure. But they've got a lot to prove on Sunday night because they were at their best on this season against the Eagles and still gave up 30 points, and the Eagles offense is not the Bills. So we've got a lot to learn tomorrow night, which should be fun and will definitely be a fun postgame show because we're going to have a lot to talk about. Injury front here, questionable designations for both Chris Jones and Charvarius Ward. Chris Jones did not practice at any point this entire week with a wrist injury. Andy Reid did say that he thought Chris Jones was a guy that would be able to play on Sunday despite not practicing all week if that did end up coming to fruition. That is very rare for the Chiefs to do. But if Jones is in shape still, if he's conditioned enough to be able to go out and play a full football game, maybe he gets a limited role, maybe he's a situational pass rusher, I don't know. But this defense and all of its struggles only are going to get exaggerated if they end up basically just swapping out Chris Jones for a returning from injury Frank Clark. I am a little bit worried about that. And again, been worried about plenty of things defensively already. Let's go hear from Spags a little bit and some of the things he said earlier this week. He talked a little bit about the defense as a whole against the Eagles and how he felt his unit performed.
Listen, it was a little bleedy, and we don't ever want to be bend but don't break, but it felt like that. But I think the point about the red zone is huge. That offense is challenging because they get things on their terms. By that I mean they run it when you're taking away the pass, and they throw it when you're taking away the run. And I would say this, I was totally impressed with both the quarterback and number six, the wide receiver. Not that I didn't think they were good going in, but coming out of it, I got a great deal of respect for them. And so they moved the ball a little methodically. Our tackling wasn't what it was like the week before, and I think that hurt us. But all in all, you know, you take away the one play at the end, and we had a couple of guys hurt and stumbling around, so we tried to come after them, and they ended up throwing a touchdown. 42-23 would have felt a lot better than 42-30. But the bottom line is we had more points than they did.
I get it. I mean, saying the tackling wasn't what it was against the Chargers feels sort of damning with faint praise, but whatever. I'll talk more about it in a second. I want you to hear sort of this next clip and some of the exchanges that happened throughout it, specifically around the miscommunications that it seems like this defense has had. Spags wasn't too willing, I don't think, to fully give up on there being a major issue there, but I think it's something that is very much worth noting. So here's Spags and the miscommunications.
The one that I can remember, and we've talked to the guys about this, but, you know, if you kind of get injured and you think you might have to come out, do it right away. Because if you don't do it right away, there's some, you stay in Indiana. So there was one of those. We were making a substitution. That's one I remember vividly. Listen, anytime we prepared for it, we had a bunch of no-huddle periods, and I thought our offense, Chad was out there last week, did a great job with it. So as far as the preparation, I felt we were prepared. We didn't quite get it done the way we wanted to. And we're going to get teams doing that all the time.
The calls getting in from the sideline, particularly in the red zone, are you comfortable that things are getting relayed?
Yeah.
Sunday was the second straight game. You guys giving up a touchdown where it looked like you guys...
Say it again.
Sunday was the second straight game. It looks like you guys gave up a touchdown when guys weren't quite ready.
The first one...
You're talking about in L.A. now?
No, I don't know. I'm thinking of one that was a two-point play that we weren't able to get our... And then I watched a couple of clips after that, and I see officials stopping and waiting on two-point plays. There's one. There's probably another...
Austin Eckler touchdown.
Right after the fumble that didn't happen, right?
Yeah. Are we going to... Whatever. Got to get it done better. We practice it. We got a bunch of fourth downs. We take the last play of one or two or three periods a week where we go right to the line and we make a call.
I don't think Spags really wanted to go play by play through that. It sounded like, which I mean, I understand, I guess, but also the idea that there's not been a lot of issues communication wise is sort of silly to me. Like, you can pick your spots, right? I get it. And you want to say, hey, you know, on the 2-point conversion, the refs probably should have slowed everything down so we could have gotten in our personnel and all of that. But there's even been these moments of clear, like, chaos right before the snap is happening. Not because of substitutions, but in the hurry up, which apparently they run a bunch of. Chaos that happens after the snap, and there's something else that Seth detailed, where you've got guys who are supposed to be masters of this defense, which is why they are playing as much as they are. Anthony Hitchens and Dan Sorensen taking false steps and directions, biting on play action, totally missing on their read, and then all of a sudden somebody comes wide open in the flat behind them because neither of those guys are necessarily speed demons. You just can't... I asked Spags a couple weeks ago whenever Matthew came back, like, hey, have you coached a player who has made a greater impact on a defense than Matthew? And he mentioned somebody from New York, and then he said Matthew is one of those guys, and also Hitchens is one of those guys. If Matthew and Hitchens are both like PhDs in Spags defense, how is it still this disorganized looking? And that's not even a criticism necessarily of Matthew or Hitchens or whatever. I'm not sure what's going on there. And there are execution issues. I don't necessarily think that this is a Spags problem. I wouldn't hate to see maybe a slightly simpler version of the defense. It looks a little more like last year's defense than whatever they're doing this year. But it doesn't seem ultimately, and upon further review, like Spags is telling them to end up not covering someone, you know? That's communication and execution, which is something that this defense has obviously really struggled with. I'm Josh Briscoe. Blake Schneiders is on the other side of the glass. We'll take a break here on Sports Saturday and talk to Joe Wiz whenever we come back. We'll find some games from this upcoming NFL slate that he likes. Try to help him make some better bets whenever we come back.
This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.